Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, April 29th, 2015. Wendy Wilson will be joining us shortly from Apothecary Herbs, as she does each and every Wednesday, once in a while Thursday. Good afternoon, Al.
And sometimes maybe a Friday, but in
maybe
any
Friday,
case, good
in
after,
any case.
During one of the days of the week, Wendy will be here.
Well, she's usually here, but every now and then she might skip a week. But anyway, let's move on and get to the gold and silver prices so we can bring her on. We have gold today down $7.70. We're going to be talking about the FOMC meeting, GDP numbers, during the second break after Wendy Wilson. We have so we have gold down $7.70 at $12.05, silver down $11 at $16.60, platinum down $3 at $11.58, palladium up $6 at $785. The USDX today was trading down lower 0.86 at $95.23. Crude oil was up 1.38 at $58.44. Everything was up, down, up, down, up, down. And the paper markets today, they were all down. And let's see how they traded out at the end. The Dow down 75, still above 18 at 18.35. The NASDAQ was down 31, 5,023. And the S&P was down 8 at 21.06. The 10-year yield, 2.04%. Oh, let's see what else. Euro, 111. Of course, we'd see that increase with a drop in our dollar. And European markets got hammered last night. You had Germany down almost 3.25%. And, excuse me, just sometimes breathing in that air can cause you some.
It's better than the alternative.
Melody. It's better than not breathing in the air.
Yeah, that's right.
All righty, we got Wendy Wilson joining us this afternoon from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy. What you got for us today?
Well, I thought we'd talk a little bit about being salt sensitive, which, you know, a lot of people think, you know, salt has a lot of things to do with blood pressure. And then people that are on these blood pressure medicines, you know, this could relate to an issue that you know, drug interactions is a major issue for people that are on those type of drugs. So it's kind of a combination topic today. We're going to be talking about salt and blood pressure meds. Is that okay?
It's okay with me.
Sounds fine.
Okay, well, you know, the drug interactions, one of the leading causes of death, and patients really don't tend to think twice about the drugs the doctors recommend. And according to Dr. David Sack, he's the CEO of Elements of Behavioral Health, he says the average patient will leave the doctor's office with a minimum of two prescriptions per office visit. That's a lot of medicine. He also says that most patients don't even bother to check the drug side effects or any of the interactions within their medication and to see if this will benefit them. He also says don't depend on your pharmacy to catch serious drug interactions, and it's really up to the individual to help minimize the risk of deadly drug use, and I'll tell you why in just a few minutes. Now, chemist Shane Ellison of the People's Pharmacy, he used to work for the pharmaceutical industry. Now he's a big proponent for self-help and nutrition. He reports that the United States has had inadequate drug interaction warnings for over 40 years. And he really feels that it's the Achilles heel of modern medicine. He said the invention of computers has helped to track some drug interactions, but sadly, he says, these alerts are overridden by doctors and pharmacists who consider them unimportant. And the reason, one of the reasons he says is the pharmacies are filling so many blood pressure medication orders and so many other orders for drugs that they just hit the skip button when that alert comes up. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, it creates liability for doctors, though, if people understood this.
What malpractice insurance is for. That's what people say. I know, it's sad. It's really sad. I don't want to be on that list. But, you know, at the top of Shane Ellison's list of drugs that we should be really concerned about are the ACE inhibitor drugs and the angiotensin receptor blockers, he says, because they're prescribed for heart and renal failure conditions. Renal failure is kidney failure, for those who didn't know. Also, it appears that anyone that's diagnosed with congestive heart failure and renal failure, he says, runs the risk. Those people run the risk of dying from their medications because of interactions. So, well, let's touch on the salt-sensitive for just a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, anyway, there's this term in medicine called salt-sensitive, and it's a label that medicine uses for potential hypertension patients. So scientific medicine pretty much blames salt for 95% of the high blood pressure cases, and they also call this essential hypertension. And so medicine thinks that this is kind of a mystery as to why salt does that, but not really. It's the devitalized salt that doesn't have your minerals left in it that causes that problem. Now, scientists report that the Japanese are a race of, quote, essential hypertension people because they eat a lot of salty fish, and they consume more salt than any other people on the planet. And you'd think that entire country would be on blood pressure meds, but they're not. So there are other factors that tend to lead to hypertension, such as obesity, stress, diabetes, and, of course, not having a whole organic salt with the minerals left in it can also increase your risk of hypertension.
And when we talk about an organic salt, you're talking mm-hmm. about a sea salt,
right.
Ultimately, whether it comes out of the ocean today or it was deposited a million years ago or whatever, you're still talking about a sea salt, and you are saying the problems that they associate with salt are when we have a pure sodium chloride, not sea salt that has a multitude of minerals besides sodium chloride.
Right. Your organic whole salt that comes from the ocean and is allowed to dry in the sun without any processing has 84 microminerals that are cardiovascular system support elements. And those elements help your arteries and veins stay flexible so they don't get stiff and rigid and collect plaque. They help your cell wall stay strong so that you're more resistant to viruses and bacteria. It helps to regulate fluids in the system. Salt and water are counter-regulatory. And if you take the amniotic fluid, Al, when we were babies, we floated around in that fluid in the womb, and they analyzed it, and it's almost identical to ocean water.
I remember seeing a video, and this goes back 40, 50 years ago, I can remember seeing a video where they were talking about blood, and they said that blood, how do they compare blood? What is this most like? And this is most like seawater.
Right.
Right? So again, we see I don't know that description would still stand up today, but it's set in my mind for 40, 50 years, however long it's been since I've seen it.
Right.
And the idea is that in terms of pH and some of the mineral content, the rest of it.
Sure. Yeah, well, you need salt. Modern medicine knows you need salt. And first thing that patients get when they arrive at the hospital is they get hooked up to an IV drip that's a saline solution. Okay, because if you don't have salt in the body, your cells explode. They just implode. So salt's real important. So when you take a lot of senior citizen off salt and there's not enough salt in the food sources, this is a problem. This is a real problem. And I would agree, don't use a devitalized salt. Use the salt that has your nutrition in it. Otherwise, the other stuff's not worthy of the dung pile, you know. So what they do is they harvest the salt, and the salt refineries distill it, and they extract the nutrients, and they sell it to pharmaceutical manufacturers, and they sell it to supplement manufacturers because they make more money that way. So you get a devitalized salt that does nothing for you, and it does put you at risk of hypertension.
I've seen you're talking about the cells and how they can either implode or explode. I didn't hear clearly what you said, depending on whether you have salt or not. It's my understanding that you have a balance between salt and potassium in your body. And one of them tends to the salt within the cells, I might have this backwards, but one of the potassium forces water into the cell, the salt within the cell forces the water and waste materials out, and it's part of the intake of nutrition and removal of toxins. And so you've got to have a balance between salt and potassium. Am I mistaken about that, or is that roughly correct?
You're spot on. Also, salt's real important for your nervous system to conduct electricity through the body, you know, for the heart muscle to beat and stuff. That's where electrolytes come from. There's electricity in there, but you need mm-hmm. minerals and salts to conduct mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for salt, make sure it's sun-dried, and it'll be a gray color. It won't be white. I do caution people using harvested salts from mines or the ground, because they can be more concentrated, and you can get shale in with that, and shale's very damaging to the kidneys, the fine filters of the kidneys. So if you're using a mine salt, use it sparingly.
What do you think about it's kind of an orange-colored salt.
It's Himalayan.
Himalayan. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the brown, the oranges, the yellow. Well, it's a mine salt. They'll say it comes from an ancient salt bed. Well, that may be true, but over time it gets compacted and condensed, and in the harvesting of it, you could get some other things in there too. So just be careful with your salts. I prefer just to get the straight up ocean salt, and it's real important where you get it from, because the salt flats on the ocean, on the coast, is the ancient way that they harvested salt. The flats would have sand and clay, which would allow for a proper drainage of the salt water from the salt. And then they'd pile the salt up in a big cone and let it sun dry. And the top salt was considered the premium salt, because depending on the time of year it was harvested, let's say spring, if you had fields of flowers nearby, the top salt would absorb a lot of the aromas and flavors from those flowers that were budding, maybe lavender or buttercups or things like that. So the top salt was always considered the premium salt. But it's going to be on the gray side. Or it's off-white. It's not going to be white. If you see sea salt and it's stark white, it's been artificially processed. So then your mineral content, your nutrition content's been diminished.
If we are purchasing a sea salt that's been recently refined, taken out of the ocean in the last 6 months or a year or whatever, are there some areas that we should avoid in terms of water pollution and others that are perhaps
right.
less
yeah.
polluted?
I mean, if we're going to drive the salt, there's some places where I don't want salt from.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, France right now has the premium salt way to go. And they have the salt flats. They still kind of do it the ancient way. And from what I can tell, they have the best salt that you can get right now. So France would be where you'd want to get your Celtic sea salt from.
All right.
Well, moving along to, let's talk about drug combo interactions, especially if you're on those blood pressure medications, because a lot of people are taking prescription medications and they may consume things that they shouldn't, like alcohol and other drugs. So and people over 50 should be well aware of this, because that age group, they start to be on an average of 5 or more medications. So you really have to check your drug interactions, because as we've just explained, the pharmacist is going to hit that skip button on the cautionary that comes up on his computer. So, you know, I think it's amazing, because people are more concerned about the chemicals that are in their flooring than what they're putting in their body through the pharmaceutical chemicals. So, interesting thing that if you're taking certain drugs, that you want to be really careful. For instance, the blood thinners, you don't want to use alcohol, of course, when you're on blood thinners, because that also thins the blood. So if they're on Warfarin or Coumadin or even aspirin, it would encourage more bleeding issues. Also, it would be really important for patients, and they never hear this from their doctor. These blood thinners and certain foods don't interact very well, like spinach and broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cabbage and most of the leafy greens with lots of chlorophyll, they enhance a bleeding risk when you're on blood thinners. Did you know that, Al?
No, I had no idea.
I did.
Absolutely. Okay. Also, if people are taking stimulant drugs, let's say Ritalin, let's say you have a grandbaby or a child on Ritalin, you definitely don't want alcohol with that. But stimulant classes of drugs mixed with alcohol would also include caffeine and nicotine and diet pills and over-the-counter decongestants and cold medicines, and people don't even make that connection when they start mixing things. So,
what about something like coffee with caffeine?
The caffeine in the coffee. It's a nervous system, agent, see, and you've got a stimulant in the Ritalin already.
Yeah.
So that's my plan is pretty basic. Here's the one thing I wanted to mention. Blood pressure medicines and antibiotics. This was a curious thing. Very dangerous combo, actually. People who are taking blood pressure meds, most of people will get prescribed an antibiotic if they get sick. So that's 1 out of 100,000 patients that are on blood pressure medicines will also be prescribed an antibiotic. And this combo, according to the Archives of Internal Medicine, is very dangerous. And there's even warning and sudden death precautions when people get prescriptions on this. But the pharmacist hits the override button.
So what can we do to compensate for the pharmacist who hits the override button?
Well,
how is it that people, what can do people do to protect themselves? You're telling us is the pharmaceutical and medical industry is not protecting us, up to us to protect ourselves. How do we do that?
Right, and Dr. Sack said that. You're going to have to actually be more proactive, and, well, you may want to look at some other ways instead of taking antibiotics if you have to take your prescription drugs. And even if you're on blood pressure medicines, you also want to check to see if there's any interaction with certain herbs. For instance, you don't want to take, if you're on cancer medicines, you don't want to take anything that has licorice in it. So you have to do some research yourselves or ask somebody that would know. And I'm pretty much proactive, and I try to stay off all the prescription stuff. And my blood pressure is 122 over 60, usually. And it says 60, 69, somewhere in there. So I use heart herbs, circulatory herbs. I use immune-boosting herbs. And I try to stay away from the doctor's office. And most people have that power if they want to exercise it. So if they want to learn more, they can give us a call and we can send them information, a free product catalog, of course. The number is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or they can visit us online at thepowerherbs.com.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much. Always appreciate your information, and we look forward to talking to you again next Wednesday.
Thanks, Al. Thanks, Melody. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. We will be right back to Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I have to come back to work now. Wendy was very informative today, and I always enjoy listening to Wendy and sharing the information, trying to share the information with family members and so forth. We were going to talk today about the FOMC. They came a little bit pessimistic on the U.S. economy. They were in a two-day meeting, no interviews, but they did release statements as far as reference to the growth, the GDP. And we've had the poorest economic showing in a year, and the GDP was down sharply from a 2.2% annual growth rate in the fourth quarter. The Department of Commerce said the advance gross domestic product numbers, and of course they adjust these, three times before they take the final number, show that the economy only expanded by 0.2% in the first quarter of 2015, and even expectations were of 1% growth. And you've had exports They dropped nearly a full percentage point. You had oil and gas exploration. They plunged almost 49%. Consumer spending was also down. And, of course, weather was the big culprit for the consumer spending. The stronger dollar, of course, was the exports. And we know the price of oil was for the gas exploration and so forth. The central bank also was a little bit more negative on the labor market, saying that the pace of job gains moderated. So it looks like they are looking to the committee anticipates that it will be appropriate to raise the target range for the federal funds rate when it has seen further improvement in the labor market.
Also known as when heck freezes over.
Heck freezes over.
That's
and it's reasonably confident.
Heck freezes over and will raise the rates.
That inflation will move back to its 2% objective over the medium term. So we have the government bond prices fell, and the 10-year note rose to 2.6% from 2% late on Tuesday. What were you going to say, Al?
I was just one of the. We are still, if you follow the GDP announcements and the rest of that, everyone understands that we get the announcement today. They say, haha, it's 0.2% growth for the first quarter of the year. There will be a subsequent announcement where they revise the figure and perhaps another one after that where they revise it again.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we find out what really happened in the first quarter, we will be well into the second quarter. It will, and what are the probabilities that we're going to find out that, oh, wait, it wasn't 2% growth or 0.2% growth. It was actually 0.8% growth. Are we going to, when they revise the numbers, are they likely to go up or are they likely to go down? And if they go down, are they going to show us negative growth? Are we going to go into a negative growth rate for the first quarter? Is that probable or merely, you know, possible?
Well, you know, that's what they did last year, and the first quarter showed into the negative rate. And I don't know. You don't know because they just lie so much. You don't know if they came down with this, 0.2%, so they could raise it for the next two times to make it look like it better than what it was. They didn't want to go into negative territory, so we'll just border the line, and you know, so this will show that we can withstall or hold off on the any rate increase talk. Then this way, it pushes us up to. December or, the first or sometime well into 2016 before we have to deal with any true rate increase. So, there's just a bunch of.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Silliness.
Again, we've talked about this before, but the need to maintain public confidence. That public confidence is a critical component of the economy. And people understand that if the government comes out and they say, oh, my gosh, the sky is falling, it's falling, it's falling, people lose confidence, they stop spending. And by telling people the truth, all right, that things are, well, we're having a difficult problem right now or something of a problem, by merely telling the truth, we diminish public confidence. When they aren't confident, they don't spend, they save. It results in increased unemployment. Businesses don't sell as much. People get laid off, and it feeds on itself. There's a spiral that feeds on itself, and the less confidence we have, the less we spend, the less profits businesses make, the more unemployment we have, which just puts more of us out of work, less able to spend. And so you can see the rationale behind lying to the public in order to maintain public confidence. On the one hand, you got to admit it makes a certain amount of sense. On the other hand, how far can it go? You know, if it's a question of lying, for a little while in order to get a better quarter, a better second quarter, all right, maybe that's justified, and then we're back on track in the economy. But what happens when you are lying for years? And to some degree, that's what we've seen since the onset of the Great Recession. We haven't had straight information. We have had, the Federal Reserve has repeatedly talked about raising interest rates. And the markets have anticipated that the interest rates were going to rise, and they've done it repeatedly over the course of the last 6 years. But the interest rates have not increased to any significant degree. We've been holding down near zero for most of the 6 years. So on the one hand, Bernanke and Yellen, they've been telling us one thing, but they've been doing another. And I suppose part of the implication there is that you have to pay more attention to what they're doing than what they're saying. And I say that from the perspective that we are better off knowing the truth and investing accordingly than we are in being fed lies, accepting the lies, and making our investment decisions, including whether we buy things, sell things, whatever we're doing, we're making those based on lies. The question, you know, there's a question in all of this. It's important for the government to lie to the public to maintain public confidence. I get that. I don't like it, but I get it. But isn't it also important that somebody tell the truth? I mean, if you're on the Titanic, how long do you want the captain to keep telling you that the ship is not sinking? And don't pay any attention to the water that's running down the companionway in front of your cabin. That's just a normal cleaning process or harsh winter or whatever. At what point does somebody need to say, look, the ship is going down and you better get your life preserver on and get into a lifeboat and get ready. There's going to be a big problem. When do we get to that moment where government finally has to tell us the truth? And when they do tell us the truth, if and when that moment comes, they will have to admit how long they've been lying to us. And a lot of people are going to be certainly surprised and maybe infuriated when they find out the government could see certain problems coming, manifesting, and they should have said something about it a couple of years ago. But instead, government leads us on, inspires confidence, or at least tries to, in order to keep us spinning the hamster wheel and perhaps re-stimulating the economy. And I don't have an answer for what you should do on this. Is it better to tell people the truth and let them lose confidence in the economy? Or is it better to lie to them and maintain confidence and perhaps thereby restore the economy? Are we going to restore the economy more quickly? Tell us the truth. We're in trouble. People stop spending. We go into a deeper recession, maybe a depression. How fast can we pop out of it? We have to go through a couple of bad years. Then we pop back out and we, you know, begin to restore the economy. Or should we accept government's lies and go through a couple of stagnant years? Not so bad, but stagnant. But inevitably, these stagnant years have to give way to something bad. And then maybe we get a decade of depression. These are difficult questions, and they are as much philosophical as, you know, objective, based on objective data, which is better. Tell the truth and go into a depression right now, or keep lying and don't go into a depression for another couple of years. What's the advisable solution?
Well, you know, along with those, we need to cut out these trade deals and so forth. And tomorrow's program with James Corbett, we hope that he'll bring some information about the TPP meeting that the Prime Minister of Japan has been in Washington. And I didn't see, I saw a little bit of discussions and, you know, comments coming about that meeting, and, you know, everybody is all, you know, kissy kissy happy happy, but you know, that doesn't mean, it'll be interesting to see what the newspapers and what the news is relating in Japan. And as we know, James Corbett is residing in Japan. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any more information coming from that. But these trade agreements need to be cut. They need to be changed. I think with this new trade agreement, it's going to allow freer movement of and have more immigration coming into this country. And, you know, it's just a bad deal. And we you know, there will be no recovery.
It's a bad deal for
deal
for American workers.
Absolutely. So
it might be a great deal for multinational corporation
owners,
but it's a bad deal for American workers.
And there's so much more with this. Why do you think it's so private? Why do you think this thing has been done,
secret,
all these agreements
secret.
Have been done in secrecy? They don't want you to know. They don't want the people to know.
They don't want people
to
know. Again, they're trying to maintain this confidence level. Oh, we're doing this for the betterment of the country. We're going to lie to you people, if only lying by silence. Well, they're lying to you. All right? Shouldn't you have a right to have some sort of influence on this by knowing what's going on? What is it that they intend to do with these treaties? And why are these treaties, which will, in theory, bind all of us, how can these treaties be implemented without we the people having some feedback on it, some input, where we say, wait a second, this isn't good for us. This is going to hurt our jobs. It's going to hurt our standard of living. And they say, well, it doesn't matter. We got people who give Congress and senators to give us a lot of money, and they're bribing us with what are called political campaign contributions, and so we're going to do what's right for them. And you people who merely work, you know, have jobs, too bad. You know, this country has been betrayed in so many ways by its own government, and they continue to do so. It's not a surprise that the super rich are getting richer. It's not because they work harder or they work smarter in the sense of technically smarter. They're smarter in the sense that they bribe Congress to pass laws that help them get richer and justify taking more money from the average people. That, from my perspective, is a fundamental reason why the super rich get super rich. Not because they work harder. Not because they're more intelligent. I don't doubt that they work hard. I don't doubt that they're intelligent. But they are bribing Congress to pass laws that serve their interests rather than the interests of the nation.
I mean, when you have the Fed that comes out and basically deletes any dates for any rate increases, what, don't you think the next quantitative easing is shortly behind the next announcement? You know, maybe not next month or, you know, in June or in September, but maybe the first of next year, because they can't do anything. They need more money. They need more stimulus. And all this stimulus has done is help the wealthy.
And it's not having the intended effect, and the implication is that the Fed may not have the same level of control that it once enjoyed. Which brings us to the next point.
Well, and it's all countries. It's just not our Fed. It's just not our government.
Oh,
it's just not our rates. It's rates around the country, around the world. It's rates, you know, it's all these countries.
Which means the system itself is perhaps out of control. It means, and why might, well, first, the Fed has historically managed the economy by adjusting the interest rates and by adjusting the money supply. They pumped an extra $3 trillion into the economy, and that didn't make much difference since the Great Recession. Their ability to move the economy by adjusting the money supply is no longer apparent. Their ability to stimulate the economy by lowering the interest rates, they've taken them down near zero and held them there for 6 years, and they still don't have stimulation. It's evidence that the Fed no longer has mechanisms to control. They still have a certain amount of influence, but control, forget that. And if the Fed doesn't have control, who does? If the Fed doesn't have control, who is in control? The answer is maybe nobody. And if that's the case, again, we have the analogy of the Titanic steaming through the icy waters of the North Atlantic. There's icebergs all around, and nobody's in the wheelhouse. Ship's moving, but it's not in control. Now, does that inspire confidence, or does that suggest it's, you know, again, we're it's only increasing the probability that we're going to hit an iceberg. Because we just keep on going in one direction. And if there's an iceberg there, we're not going to move left or right, port to starboard to avoid the iceberg. We're going to probably hit it. And then what? Who's in control? And if there is no control, how much confidence can we have in the system? And when we sit back, if it's true that no one is in control right now, if the system is beyond control, right, why is that? And the answer is probably that there's some fundamental flaw in the system. We are getting to the end of the Ponzi scheme. There are limits. You can't run the Ponzi scheme forever. And I think that's what's happening. We're coming to the end of the Ponzi scheme, and it just doesn't seem to work anymore. And if that's the truth, we're going to see some sort of a serious economic problem in the near future. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Segerstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 or international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Segerstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Segerstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
We have a caller, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the raging casino. We have Bill from Ohio.
Hi.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
I had a question. What's the scenario at the end of the Ponzi scheme? What's it going to look like?
That's a good question. That's what everybody wants to know. Is it going to be some utter collapse that results in chaos and the kind of problems they saw when the Soviet Union disappeared? Is it going to be that bad, or is it going to be, you know, a kind of something similar to the Great Depression? Could it be just a serious recession? What are we going to have here? It's very difficult to know. It's hard to anticipate. But one thing that seems certain to me is that the debt instruments are going to be wiped out.
Right.
There's too much debt that can't be paid. National debt, mortgage debt, auto debt, the rest of it, credit cards and so on. The total debt in this country is astronomical. It can't be paid. It's not going to be paid. And that means that pieces of paper that people are holding in their bank accounts, in their safety deposit boxes and so on, buried under, they got them under the mattress, wherever they've got them, they're going to turn out to be worthless. When the debt disappears, one man's debt is another man's asset in this economy. And when we have to admit the debt can't be paid. Now, the problem, when the debt disappears and the correlative assets become worthless, paper assets, where are we going to find collateral to justify building a new factory or a new shopping center or a hospital or a school? We depend on that paper debt, and yet it, because it creates paper assets. If the debt, we have to admit the debt doesn't can't be paid, the assets are going to have to disappear, we're going to be out of collateral. It means a little bit of money, if anyone has a little bit of real money, in my opinion, it's going to become extremely valuable at a time when there is no paper, where, I won't say there's no, but the amount of paper collateral is dramatically diminished. People are going to sit back and say, wait a second, this guy over here has got some gold coins. He's got some real money. Would you like to invest? You may be able to get some extraordinary deals. That would be perhaps a scenario. What kind of scenario do you expect, Bill?
Well, I'm trying to figure out if there was no market when gold and silver became, it was because you had a trade, it helped trading. So if you had a market, you didn't have markets, or you had a quarter of the economy now, gold would still be precious, but anything that goes on the market, because it's part of an economy, is worth more. Once it goes off the market exchange, you have to figure out how to barter with it. And I'm looking more, that seems to be more and more a certainty, at least for some period of time. After a collapse, what I'm supposed to do, I mean, it's like if we had no oil, okay, how much is gold worth if there's no oil in the economy versus if there is oil in the economy? Because oil is the real ultimate commodity. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
The whole thing's up for... I agree that nobody knows.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who have theories, including myself, of what might take place, but nobody knows. All we can say is it's going to be a very bumpy ride, and people should be prepared. Is gold going to save your life? Well, maybe it will, and maybe it won't. We don't know, but I can't imagine that pieces of paper are going to save you.
That's right.
You're going to have something tangible. You're going to have tools, guns, bullets, land. Capacity to grow food, something tangible. You may have to barter. I agree that might, in a worst case scenario, it might work out that way. But I just don't see, you know, people will say you can't eat gold. Well, that's true, you can't, but you can't eat stock market certificates either.
But you can't trade oil.
If you got
a barrel of oil, you can do something with that.
Well, I agree, but I mean, you know,
with gold, you can buy whatever oil you need. But
I think
everything is in theory, because we really don't know how it is going to play out. I believe there will be markets. Now, they're not going to be the same type of markets we have today. And if there is no market for gold, it will be a black market. And a lot of that price on anything that's on a black market is still driven by demand. If I'm not mistaken.
Well, and your ability to negotiate. You know,
there'll be people
that you can
demand.
Sell a gold coin to for one thing, and other people won't
like
pay
any...
that much, or they'll pay more.
I get that, Al. It's the same as anything when you negotiate. We're not talking about negotiating. We're talking about the demand for something. And when you do negotiate, you know, you often want to have something that the other person will be able to use also, because he has to continue. And so, you know, I think things become, if markets are not working, are not functioning, I think it will be a brief period of time. Now, the big definition of what is brief. Is brief, you know, 1 month, 2 months, 6 months, or a year? But I don't believe we're going to go back to the Mad Max days. I think things change. I think there's going to be lots of people who will lose lots of their wealth. I believe lives will be lost. And I think we will be, you know, experiencing things that people are going to say, this is happening here in this country. So, again, it's all about being prepared and sticking to basics. Have a plan and sticking to basics and doing what's suitable for you, because everybody's different and everybody's in a different place, and you have to do what's suitable for you.
Let me ask you this, Bill. What do you think the chances are that in the event of some sort of the Ponzi scheme fails, all right, what do you think the chances are that the paper dollar will survive that failure?
Well, I mean, that I'm worried about eventually it's the mark of the beast, but is there a time between?
Sure.
What do I do? I mean, ultimately, that's what they want. They've got that prepared. So are they going to eradicate, make gold worthless?
No, I don't. They can't make gold worthless. They can't make gold worthless. It's been here for 5,000 years. Nobody's going to believe the government. They can say you can't spend it, you can't have it. They can say it a bunch of things, and they already say you can't have cocaine, marijuana, crack, and that doesn't count for anything.
The government. What I've heard, lately was something
about
energy credits.
What about the dollar?
Yeah, energy credits. I heard something on another guy on True News talk about energy credits.
What good does that do a man in the street?
What's that?
What good will energy credits do for a man in the street who'd like to buy a meal for himself and his family?
It will be used as a way to control people, that basically there's going to be some chip in your body that says you're worth so much energy credits and you can only use so much and spend so much or have so much.
I'm not sure the government will have enough money to install all those chips in every one of us. You know, where I'm going with this is this. My question is, will the good dollar survive the end of the Ponzi scheme? I believe it will not.
All right.
And if it does fail, then the first financial instrument that everyone is going to want and need, we're going to have to sit back and say, okay, what are we going to use for money? We're going to use corn cobs or energy credits? Or should we use gold and silver coins? Or maybe even the coins that you can save in your piggy bank right now.
Right.
I mean, the quarters, nickels, and dimes, they're not silver. But they might stand up where paper and digital dollars will no longer exist or be welcome. It's hard to say, but I am inclined to believe that the money, the paper dollars, will be... They'll go into probably hyperinflation, which is just a way of saying people don't value them anymore. I offer you $100 to pay for something to buy. You say, I'm not taking that. I don't take $100 for a wheelbarrow. All right, I won't take that because the dollar isn't worth anything. Okay, how about I give you $500 for the wheelbarrow? Well, all right, maybe you'll sell a wheelbarrow for $500. It's the way we get into hyperinflation. It reflects, hyperinflation reflects the fact that the public is losing confidence in the dollar or the currency. That's what hyperinflation, to my mind, is all about. Once that begins to happen, people are going to start looking for an alternative monetary system. What other money can we use? The dollar's going into hyperinflation. We don't have confidence in. Can we use the ruble, the euro, the yuan, or can we use gold or silver? And the answer might be all of the above.
Yeah,
but I don't think the dollar is going to make it. I'm inclined to hang on to gold and silver because I have no doubt they will still function as money in a post-Ponzi scheme environment. All right. They'll still be there as money. I don't know what they're going to be worth, but they'll still be there as money, and I don't trust the dollar to do the same thing. Does that make any sense to you, Bill? Do you agree or do you disagree?
I agree. The only problem is Russia, India, China are the ones where gold means something, and I don't intend to move there. So
well, it'll mean something here. It'll mean something in this. It will mean something in this country quick enough. All right. It may be that the majority of the American people don't pay any attention to gold right now, unless it's in their fillings or their wedding rings. But once this thing goes south, all of a sudden people are going to become very sensitive to the concept of gold, and they're going to, Melody was talking about demand. I think the demand for gold is going to increase dramatically and as a replacement for dollars. And if that happens, then the gold will inevitably become, it'll be able to purchase more and more than it has in recent times. It'll become more valuable.
Now, if it goes up, I think it'll go up like 5,000 in a day. That's what I think.
I don't know about 5,000 in a day, but that wouldn't necessarily mean that the gold increased by $5,000 in purchasing power in a day, but I can understand that the dollar, if it were hyperinflating, might lose that much purchasing power in a day. You know, you've got a teeter-totter effect. You've got gold on one side, you've got the dollar on the other side. One goes up, the other goes down. What's really happening? Is gold going up or is the dollar going down? Is gold going up faster than the gold, than the dollar goes down?
You know, when one system falls, another one arises. And when we were in, when Zimbabwe was having their hyperinflation, the one thing that people were looking for when they'd send the kids down to the streams was they were panning for gold, because gold was the only thing that purchased anything. Now, you could say that Zimbabwe doesn't have any desires for gold other than at that point in time. They're not like Russia or China out there purchasing a mass amounts of gold. They don't have an understanding of gold, but they did then. They realized that that gold would take them and they could buy their loaf of bread. And the same thing here. When people don't have any idea what gold can do for them, they look at it and they've been told that it's just another, you know, useless piece of property that doesn't
relic,
barbarous
or commodity.
Relic.
And they're going to find out that's not true.
It's not true.
Yeah. They're going to find out it's been good for 5,000 years.
And when you talk about these energy credits, you have to ask, I mean, I don't know the whole story behind them, so I can't comment on them, but does things make sense? And I do believe that if you believe in the mark of the beast, you have to be prepared to say no. You have to set yourself up so you can say no. You have to have a plan so you can say no. And it isn't going to be easy when you have your babies and grandbabies that are hungry. It's going to be very difficult, so... You know, are these energy credits going to protect you? Are they going to set you up so that you can say no? No. I've heard it. I've said this for a long time. You have to become your own central bank. You have to have a plan. And when it comes to the finances, when it comes to the monetary part of your plan, I can't see anything other than gold and silver.
I can, I've told this story on the program before, but I'll try to fit it in here in the last minute and a half before we go off the air. It was reported by James Michener in Tales of the South Pacific that prior to World War II, a very intelligent man could see World War II was coming. He decided to search the globe for a place where he could retire to in the world, and the war, the world would have its war and he would be safe. And after much searching and research, he settled on an island, a virtually deserted island in the Pacific that had food and water and whatever, and it was called Iwo Jima. All right, he thought he was going to avoid the war, and the point behind the story is no one is smart enough to figure out exactly what to do here. Some of us will be fortunate to do what's best, and some of us will be unfortunate and make some choices that will be turn out to be unwise. But if you can see the problem coming, you are still put in a position where you're going to have to make some choices. If you're sensible, you are going to try to prepare as best you can, and... You know, you do the best you can. You hope for the best. Pray for, pray to good Lord take care of you, and move on from there. Bill, we have to thank you for your phone call. We are out of time. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Bill, and Frank, the producer. Bye bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.
money.